Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hi and welcome along to the fourth episode of the Left on Red podcast. Hopefully this will be something to brighten up your Monday afternoon.
Okay, so unfortunately, I was the only one of us two in attendance on Saturday. Harry had some work commitments, we'd say.
Yeah, I had a shift that started at 8, so I basically cycled off as soon as the match finished.
Yeah, I don't think you're making it back in time.
Yeah, not from Brighton.
But also, it was really, really hard to get away tickets because, I mean, I didn't actually realise before this season how, like, amazing our away support is.
Well, because essentially, like, the core of the fan base.
I mean, I always thought it was good, but it's, like, it's amazing and there's everyone wants to go. And
it's
incredible,
yeah.
No. It was awful weather. I actually didn't manage to get tickets in the away end. I was sat in the Brighton end with Laith, which was slightly...
Were you in the Brighton end or were you in, like, a box?
No, we were in the Brighton like bit. It was like essentially sort of like Brighton club level, which is a bit weird, but
okay.
But we were sat with all the
like that
fans.
Small little tier in the Emirates.
Yeah, a little bit like that. Yeah. There's like the more expensive season tickets. It was essentially that.
Okay. Lack of atmosphere then where you were sitting.
Yeah, a little bit. Okay. I mean, there was a lack of atmosphere all around the ground. To be fair, I mean, Brighton fans they're not great. No, but it was a really shit day as well. Like it Brighton's a well, lovely place weather-wise. Yeah, it was a lovely day out, and it actually worked out quite well having somewhere to sit inside the stadium. I was actually really thankful for that because I was before the game. I was like, oh god, like I'm not with the away fans. But then when it was like tipping it down,
was
and
the
everyone
away
was
section
soaking,
not covered by the roof
no,
that much.
No,
okay,
no.
Yeah.
And it sort of looked on TV like the front three rows were empty, but it was because everyone had vacated and gone to the back, so they didn't get all the rain slapping.
Okay,
in their face.
Yeah.
So it actually worked out quite well that we had somewhere to sit inside. But yeah, Brighton fans weren't amazing. Not the best atmosphere I've been in. Probably the only game that I've been to so far this season where I haven't had the ringing in my ears after.
Okay.
Which tells you a little bit.
Yeah, that signifies the home crowd were not the loudest.
Exactly. Yeah, it was a nice day actually, bar the football. The football was frustrating.
It was frustrating, a bit dire. Not dire, but just a bit of a rain check, as you were saying earlier.
Yeah. I was remembering after that, because I never know how to feel about draws. I never sort of... It never comes into my mind how I'm meant to feel, especially after a draw against, you know, a team that aren't a big six team, I'm doing air quotations, like Brighton, but they're a really good side.
They're a fantastic team. They played well as well.
Yeah, exactly.
They were a better team.
Yeah, I think we deserved nothing more than a draw.
As Mikel said very honestly in his post-match interview, it was a point gained on reflection.
Yeah, but I just never know how to feel after draws. I don't know whether, especially the ones like that, I never know whether to feel happy or whether to feel annoyed, which I always do when we don't win.
Immediate reaction is always going to be frustration because you're always desperate for 3 points.
I remember in my first season where I started going properly, which I think was 06, 07 or 07, 08. Basically, it was the first season that I went to every game. And I saw 3 consecutive 0-0 draws at the Emirates.
That's
against
rare.
Yeah. Sunderland, West Ham and... Oh, who was it? It's like Burnley or someone like
okay,
that. 3-0 draws on the bounce.
It's just continue slating Burnley.
Yeah, and it's going to start to look like we're a bit obsessed too.
Yeah, we should probably cut out the Burnley jokes at some point.
Yeah.
Maybe today's
couple
not
of
that
weeks.
Day. Yeah, give it some time.
But yeah, and I always just remember feeling really annoyed after those draws because not only is it a draw, which you're obviously more upset about at home, but also you don't get any chance to feel anything other than frustrated at any point in the game because it's 0-0.
Well, it's a weird position where you're frustrated because you haven't won, but you're not depressed because you lost.
Yeah.
And you're in that in-between position where the trajectory's bobbing along, so it hasn't gone up or down, so you don't
really know
how to feel.
Yeah, there's no like equaliser to celebrate or going 1-0 ahead or anything like that.
It's just stable.
Yeah, which is often quite frustrating. I'd say Brighton probably makes for one of the nicer away days. I mean, I didn't experience that much of it because of the weather.
Ideally, you want to get Brighton away in May.
Exactly.
Last game of the season.
Brighton away in May.
Go down the beach first.
3 o'clock kickoff, something like that.
Sounds lovely.
So it's just nice and light. But by the time we got there, it was like sort of dim, rain slapping you in the face.
It's reality of British weather, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mark Cucurella, who was wonderful in the match, he gave Tomiyasu some serious problems. I think he was told when he signed for Brighton that they've got lovely sunny beaches all year round.
Yeah, he got suckered into the transfer a little bit. It was actually quite nice, though, to get down there because I managed to see my mate, well, one of my best mates who I've been to all three schools with prior to university. He's just started at Sussex, and his mum dropped round a care package for me to drop up to him at university. But the care package was just, it was like four coat hangers and a speaker. Because he'd already broken his computer speakers at uni. But yeah, that was quite nice to see him. He said it was really nice having a bit of London brought up to him.
Yeah.
Because he lives right by the ground. So obviously Arsenal fans being up in Brighton probably makes it quite
a
nice.
A little snippet of home life.
Yeah, feel a bit more like home.
And was everything smooth the journey down?
Yeah, journey down was all right, actually. Direct train from Finsbury Park. Was quite nice. Journey back was not smooth. That was so annoying.
Train delays with the weather and stuff like that.
Little bit of train delays, but also getting... So we left it a little bit to get out of the stadium after. We were sort of sat for about half an hour having a drink. And then we were getting in the queue for... So the station by the stadium is called Falmer. Because the stadium's actually like, it's like a 20-minute drive from the Brighton city centre, so it's not actually in the city. So you get trained from Brighton station to Falmer, okay. And then Falmer station's right by the stadium. But we were queuing up for the train at Falmer, and there was a massive queue. There were police stopping you.
Just a heap of Arsenal fans in sort of a compressed area.
Yeah, but it was like Brighton and Arsenal fans all mixed in. And there were quite a few problems with Arsenal fans being quite annoyed at Brighton fans celebrating the draw. And yeah, a couple of little scuffles there.
Nothing that went over the line, or was it all quite...
Well, no, it was all right. You know, it's all just football.
Part and parcel of,
yeah, exactly. A couple of little scuffles and quite funny arguments. An Arsenal fan actually tried to start on me and Leith as we just joined the queue, telling her, he came up to us and he said something like, "Oh, I remember celebrating a draw, don't worry." And then I was like, "What are you on about, mate? Like, we're Arsenal fans." And he was like, "Oh, sorry." Like, he was trying to start on us thinking we were Brighton fans. I don't know what about our look.
Were you not in your Arsenal tops?
No.
Oh, jackets and everything because of the weather, yeah.
No, but also, we were in the bloody home end, mate.
Of course, yeah.
Can't do that.
Oh, I would have worn a little Arsenal top underneath.
I was actually really thinking about it, but I had to wear I was wearing a white shirt, and the only Arsenal shirt I have at the moment is the yellow away kit. So wearing that under the white
wouldn't have gone down well.
No, I don't think it would have looked any good.
I actually remember when I was about six, I went to Arsenal Fulham with my first cousin, who's a Fulham fan.
Right.
And he just had no idea that it wasn't okay to come in Fulham gear. So he's come with a Fulham top on, a Fulham hat and a Fulham scarf. And my dad's just gone, "No, we're not having any of that."
You told him before you got into the ground, yeah, surely?
Oh, of course.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You've stopped him.
Yeah, of course. Oh, right. Actually, I think he kept it on underneath the jumper, but he didn't have the scarf and the hat on.
Do you remember what the score was?
I think 1-1-0.
Take it.
No, we'll take it. Yeah, it wasn't a bad
opening. Were you giving it to your little cousin? I mean, getting right up in his face.
We were both six at the time, I reckon.
Yeah.
The banter was through the roof.
Have a bit of that. Yeah. Well, before we start waffling on more about our six-year-old home games that we went to.
Best memories.
Yeah. I don't think there's much more that we need to discuss about the match day experience because the football was quite frustrating, which ruined the day a little bit, and obviously Harry wasn't there, so... Harry, do you want to lead us into some tactical analysis of the day?
Yeah, let's go for it. So in regards to Arsenal, there wasn't too much different to how we saw Mikel set us up last week against Spurs.
No.
It was a 4-2-3-1, and we tried to build out with three centre-backs again, and Tierney got high and wide.
I thought Tierney got much more high and wide than he did against Spurs, if you see what I mean.
From a starting position?
Yeah, it was more pronounced, as in, like, when Ramsdale was actually playing it out from the back, Tierney wasn't at left back.
He didn't start left back and then run up.
Yeah.
He sort of held that space. I noticed that as well, and I thought perhaps it was much more profound in the first 15, 20 minutes, and then he dropped deep a little bit because we were getting so overloaded down their wings. I thought maybe it was a little bit of a defensive risk just to level up them a bit more.
Yeah.
Because they play three at the back and four across. So maybe it was to go man for man against Joel Veltman, I think his name is, their right wing back, who's playing at the moment instead of Tariq Lamptey. That was noticeable. But we really struggled to create platforms in the first third and in the final third throughout the match.
Yeah.
Those were our two key issues. One was a collective issue and one was an individual issue. Let's talk about the collective issue first. Before we get into that, actually, I thought that we started the first 10, 15 minutes of the game with a lot of positivity and energy. I thought Smith Rowe and Saka did really well. Saka down the outside of the right and Smith Rowe was cutting in and making really incisive passes and dribbles. I thought we looked bright. But as soon as Brighton got their period, their first period of the match,
as soon as they settled, they looked like in the first sort of 10, they were a bit rocked by how positive we were at the start. Maybe it was like the first five, I don't think it was that long. But as soon as they sort of settled into how they wanted to play, it looked like they were in control of the game.
And as in most matches, teams have periods of the games where they dominate. And ours came very abruptly at the beginning.
Mm.
And once they got theirs, they didn't let us have another one because they pressed us so high up, which brings us into the collective issue in the first thirds. We had no platform because as soon as they started regaining possession, and we'll talk about what they did and why we struggled down the sides, but as soon as they gained possession in our half, whenever they lost it, their press was fantastic.
Yeah.
And whenever we regained possession, we just really struggled to play out like we usually try to.
I think, as much as I really don't want to say it, I really, really think we missed Xhaka.
Perhaps, yeah.
We really struggle with our ball retention without him, especially when we're playing against a press.
I think, also structurally.
Yeah.
This is what we were saying in the first episode we did. With Xhaka, we rely on him. He's the core cog in this structure, in the 4-2-3-1 structure that we play.
Mm.
So we rely on a player who makes mistakes, but without him, we don't do the system as well.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I do see what you mean.
Also, you were saying as well about Lokonga.
Yeah, I don't know. I think as much as we sort of mock Arteta for it, I think the system he's built really does rely on, in those positions of the centre-back pairing and the midfield pairing, it sort of actually does rely on a left-footer and a right-footer.
Yeah.
It didn't look like we had the same balance with Partey and Lokonga.
It was really highlighted how the left of the double pivot, usually, which is Xhaka, who's left-footed, but this time it was Lokonga, dropped really deep to the left side of the pitch to let Tierney bomb on.
But Lokonga had to drop a lot wider and a lot deeper because he's right-footed.
Because he needs the time to change his body angle to play out.
But that left pivot is always going to have to drop into that left-back position because that's just how we
this
play with Tierney.
Is structured. Yeah. However, so we've touched on the fact that we didn't manage to... They locked us into our half, basically, in the first half, and we didn't manage to play out well enough. We weren't brave enough in playing out.
My dad actually texted me at half time saying 0-0. What a result!
It
did feel like at the end of that first half.
It was because they were so on top of us.
Yeah,
with the ball and without the ball. And the second key issue was an individual issue. It was whenever we did play through the lines and actually play through them and pin them in their half, the platform in the final third wasn't there because we didn't have a number nine capable of controlling the football.
No.
Every time Aubameyang got the ball, we were playing lots of good line-breaking passes. Tierney was doing it, Smith Rowe was doing it. Odegaard, who I thought was poor, did it a few times, and Saka was doing it.
Yeah.
Bubbled off him. So we had no platform to hold the ball and then bounce off and have a platform to create in the final third, which we know we can do after last week.
Yeah. It may sound harsh.
It's not harsh.
The slander of Aubameyang, but it's... Despite last week, it's a problem I think me and Harry and a lot of Arsenal fans have always had with Aubameyang. That the platform for us to then play the football that we want to play is if he doesn't play exceptionally well, which he has to in order for our attack to play, it just doesn't work. And I think, you know, Lacazette, he doesn't need to play exceptionionally well for our attack to then flow off.
He's a much better footballer than Aubameyang in terms of technical ability, holding the ball up,
his touch
control, passing, vision, technique.
Yeah.
He's just not as fast as Aubameyang, and his movement in behind isn't as good as Aubameyang.
Yeah.
But in terms of sort of fundamental footballing skills, Aubameyang really lacks them. And therefore, I've always had this argument, which may sound a bit stupid, but I'll always stick to it, where regardless of whether Aubameyang scores or not, it doesn't matter, because he misses 75% of what you need from a number nine that plays in a possession-based team.
Yeah.
If he was playing in a counter-attacking team where all he had to do, his only responsibility, was on the shoulder, make outstanding runs, use your pace.
Even that yesterday, I mean, that was part of his responsibility. He was on the counter either. And he wasn't doing it.
No.
And
he got caught offside one or two times to try and do it.
Laka, when he came on, actually completed two more passes than Aubameyang did in the whole game.
That is ridiculous. Before we get on to the second half, Lacazette was incredible when he came on. His touch is impeccable.
Yeah.
The idea was just to get it into him, set it, and then we have that platform, as we were saying.
He drags defenders out as well, which then leaves space in behind for Smith-Rowe
and Sakos. Exactly. Yeah. So I thought those were two key issues we had in possession.
Yeah.
In the final and the first third. In the middle third, we struggled a bit because of those two errors either side of that third.
Yeah.
I thought Brighton made it quite hard for us, though, when they penned us in.
Mm.
With their off-the-ball work, we touched on with their pressing, but also with their on-the-ball work. What I noticed was quite a unique pattern of play that Brighton played. And I think, as we've seen with like Chris Wilder and Sheffield United when they were in the Premiership, playing a back three system can allow for really creative, unique, tactical things. Like, I think Sheffield United used to do underlapping centre-backs, which was crazy. I saw Brighton would always try and create a triangle on whatever side they were attacking down. So a lot of their attacks were down the wings rather than the middle of the pitch. And what they would do is they'd have one wing back, one of the strikers, because they played two strikers, one of the strikers would come across and one of their midfield three would come across. And then to protect like defensive transition, the other two midfielders would then just sit in front of the back three. So what they had was they always had a safe pass from the wing back to the wide centre-back on that side. They had like a balancing the pitch pass into one of the two midfielders where there was a load of space because obviously we would have all shuffled across to try and win the ball.
Mm.
Or in the best possible scenario, those three players could combine really nicely with little 1-2s to get in beyond and have crosses, which we saw a number of times with Cucurella down the left and a couple of times, I think, with Trossard, who was one of the strikers, on the right.
Yeah.
And Tomiyasu really struggled with it.
He did. He didn't look comfortable as he had done in the previous three games. He looked a bit shaky. I mean, I never like to make excuses because of conditions or anything like that, because it's the same for both teams. But I think it looked like he really struggled with the playing conditions and the surface, and I think that probably limited us a little bit. And the wins as well, I thought, were... I mean, you were saying that you've actually played at Brighton.
At Brighton, okay, their academy ground is lovely.
Mm.
It's not going to be as nice as the stadium, obviously. The Brighton academy ground's really high up in the hills. I think it's actually in Sussex, but it's very close to Brighton.
Yeah.
And the winds, it's always been ridiculous whenever I played. I'm guessing it wasn't too dissimilar.
Oh, mate, the winds were a joke. And, you know, I mean, Tomiyasu didn't play well. And Arsenal didn't play well.
One thing I was thinking about with Tomiyasu, though, the games that he's been really impressive in, obviously he was good against Norwich, but Norwich were not the hardest opponents.
Yeah.
With Burnley, he's aerially fantastic. So with Burnley playing long balls and diagonals, which we discussed a lot, he won all of them.
Yeah.
Spurs were awful. They didn't have anything midfield, so they just were forced to go long.
Yeah.
And he was good. And this is the first team he's played where he's had to defend against overloads down his side, cute little players doing little 1-2s and stuff like that.
But also, in terms of aerially, it's probably... Well, it is much harder to judge where the ball's going when it's swirling around in those winds.
Yes, yeah.
So I guess we probably saw less aerial dominance than we had from him in the last few games.
And should we move on to the second half then?
Sure.
So Brighton kept it pretty similar.
Yeah.
They might have brought on players like Solly March, etc. in the second half. I think McAllister did quite well for them when they came on.
Yeah.
And the pattern was a little bit figured out. I thought we regained a little bit more of the ball in the second half.
A little bit, yeah.
I thought actually...
Especially when Lacazette and Pepe came
on. Actually, I thought before Lacazette came on, there were three or four times when we were in, but Aubameyang couldn't control the ball. Like, really simple footballing touches.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just bobbled off him, bounced off him.
It was just the same
and
frustration throughout the game, wasn't it?
It was, it really was. But I thought the game opened up a little bit.
Yeah.
Maybe whether that was Brighton's quality decreasing or us figuring out how to block off their passing patterns, I'm not too sure.
Mm.
But there were definitely times before Lacazette came on, so before the 70th minute, where if Aubameyang had had a good touch, we would have been in, and it would have been a 3v2 or a 4v3.
It was just a game of ifs, though, really, wasn't it? For everyone,
I agree.
It was like if he'd have played it there. It's just one of those games.
And then 20 minutes to go, Lacazette comes on.
Yeah.
And I think if he came on 20 minutes earlier or at half time, we would have scored a goal.
Maybe.
Because we looked to play line breaking passes into him, rely on a good first touch under pressure to set it back, and then feed the attacking midfielders or wingers.
Yeah. I actually couldn't understand why we didn't make that substitution earlier. Maybe
it was so prominent as well. Yeah. It was really obvious.
I guess maybe it was because Brighton were more on top, and then you look at Aubameyang's pace and in behind. But it was obvious from minute one.
Yeah, on the counter,
that he was just having an off
perhaps.
There.
But also maybe politically, he's the captain.
Yeah,
a lot of people around the club are in love with him.
Yeah.
So if you don't make the person that's responsible for the club on the pitch remain on the pitch in this tough situation, then you can get easily criticised. Perhaps that was it as well. But no, also perhaps the thinking was on the counter-attack, because we know those are what his good qualities are. So now it's time for this week's player ratings. I'm going to be asking Lol this week. Should we start off with our new number one in goal, Aaron Ramsdale?
I'll give him a 7. I thought he was good. He made a fantastic save late on in the second half.
It was almost like a save / interception.
Yeah, it was like a block or whatever. But anyway,
Morgan was just waiting at the back post.
It was vital. But there was a sort of heart in mouth moment in the first half as he dropped the ball.
And it wasn't a very strong shot either.
No. So yeah, I'll give him a 7. He was solid.
There's one thing I wanted to criticise, which maybe is the coach's fault, as you were pointing out. We had a little chat about this before the podcast, where Ramsdale constantly tried to target Saka with long balls against somebody that's like twice his height and Dan Burn. It just made no sense.
Yeah, that was a weird tactical element of the game.
But no, I think I'd agree 7. Nothing more because of maybe that, and he almost cost us a goal.
Yeah.
Moving on to Tomiyasu.
I'd give him a 3.
Yeah?
Might be harsh, but I just thought he was really poor.
I think I'd up it to a 4 because in the second half he was slightly better, maybe.
Maybe. He just had made me a bit uncomfortable every time he got the ball that game.
Cucurella really
gave
him a lesson in that match. Go to Kieran Tierney on the other side.
Kieran Tierney, I'd give him a 5.
Average then?
Yeah.
Just below
not
average.
Not much. There wasn't much defensively on that side because most of it was coming down.
I thought earlier on in the game there was, and then because we talked about he started a bit higher.
Yeah.
And as soon as he just dropped back and started playing like a normal left back,
yeah,
it was kind of a bit of a boring side of the pitch.
Nothing much happened.
I agree. 5. Yeah. Ben White.
Give him an 8, actually.
I thought he was outstanding. Defensively, at least, he was outstanding.
I thought it was really good. A couple of times where he maybe sort of dillied on the ball a little bit. But, you know, aerially brilliant. As Tomiyasu was actually saying in his interview after the game, all the duels in our box we won.
Yeah.
Which was really important. So
his anticipation is incredible as well. Mm. And he saved us a few times with blocks from shots inside the box as well.
Yeah.
I might even up it to an 8.5.
Okay.
Because I thought he was that crucial to the clean sheet.
Yeah.
Gabriel?
I'd give him a 7. I didn't think he was as prominently good as Ben White.
But still solid, yeah.
But still really solid, proper warrior. And I think those two give this team a real sort of defensive base to kick on with. And I'm hoping that our attack becomes a bit more consistent.
And in spite of the fact that Brighton were on top of us, and they did have a few chances to score, I think we saw some persistence in this match, which indicates that the platform at the back, defensively at least, forget talking about playing out and all this fancy stuff. There's something to build on.
There's some grit.
There is. I like it. Lokonga.
5.
I might give him a 4.
Yeah.
I don't think he really offered anything on the ball.
No.
He was fine off the ball.
Yeah. It was just meh. Very meh.
Thomas Partey.
Again, 5 or 4. Take your pick.
For me, 4 because of the shooting.
Oh, the shooting.
I
actually ended up with 2 match balls from Brighton.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, got them at home?
Yeah. Couple of Partey shots ended up in our back garden.
Oh, right, yeah. It's just gone all the way from Brighton up the motorway.
Oh, man. I couldn't understand it. Anyway, yeah, 4.
4. He's so bad at shooting.
It's really annoying.
Martin Odegaard.
Give him a 3. I thought he was really poor today.
I think I'd give him a 4 in 9 with the other two midfielders just because he works hard.
Yeah, I guess.
And but... he was picking up areas. He was picking up the positions.
Yeah.
He just wasn't... when he got the ball, he wasn't doing anything fantastic. It was a bit sideways. And sometimes he didn't get the ball. It was just not... it's a bit of an off day, really. Saka on the right.
I'd give him a 5. I didn't think he was great. I didn't think he helped Tomiyasu out nearly enough defensively. There are a couple things in the opening 5 minutes. He beat Dan Burn with a really good run down the right-hand side. But apart from that, I didn't think it was his best day.
I think 5 is slightly harsh. I go for a 6.5. The extra 1.5 marks is because, yes, in the first 15 minutes, he was really lively and he was driving and he looked like he could have created a goal. But I still thought he was the outball throughout the match. But
he wasn't really able to
hold. He gets a low rating. As in, a 6.5 for Saka is a low rating, and he gets that because he wasn't tracking back and helping Tomiyasu out. ESR?
I'd give him an 8.5 just to make him the best player on the pitch, because I thought he was our best player on the pitch that day. I thought he was fantastic. He always is. He battles so well.
He was fantastic. His passing first, was good.
His passing, his first touch.
That cross for Aubameyang, actually, in the first half, which we get onto Aubameyang again. We've stated him a lot in this episode, and rightfully so. It's deserved. It's not an agenda. It's just genuine what we see on the pitch.
We'll praise him when he does well.
We'll praise him when the ball does stick and he flicks it around the corner into Smith Rowe against Spurs, and it's amazing. But it just happens 5% of the time.
Yeah.
But no, that cross should have been an assist. Aubameyang should have put his head on that or has stuck a foot out.
So yeah, I'll give Smith Rowe an 8.5. I thought he was our best player.
I'd go down to an 8 because I think he was our best attacking player. Ben White was equally good at the back.
Fair play.
Aubameyang?
Give him a 2. I thought it was one of the worst performances from a striker that I've seen in a while.
Maybe a mark for being on the pitch and then a mark for pressing a little bit.
Yeah, or just showing up.
Just being there.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, he was really not great.
Ainsley Maitland-Niles, he wasn't on for that much.
5.
Standard 5, right. Meh. Pepe?
5.
I think less. Meh. I'm going to go 4. I just think he had the opportunity to come on and make a difference and show why he should be in there. I know he's put on the left, and we keep on having this problem where we stick one of Saka or Pepe on the left. But I just thought he was non-existent a little bit.
But then they did switch as well, and he had a chance to run at Dan Burn a couple of times.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
4 or 5, either way. Who else came on? Laka.
I'll give Laka a 7.
I'll give Laka a 7 because he made an instant impact.
Yeah.
He suddenly looked like a team that could keep the ball in the attacking area and create a chance.
Exactly.
And the boss?
Give the boss a 6.
Okay. I think that's pretty fair.
You know, it's a solid point. There are a couple of things. I thought maybe you should have brought on Lacazette earlier.
I think you should have started Lacazette.
But you always do, don't you?
Well, yeah, because he's better.
But yeah, 6. Just, it was a meh day.
Yeah. And the away support.
The away support, I'll give them a 10 because they were unreal.
As they always are.
Oh, mate, like in the rain, constantly singing, there after the game to clap their team.
Nothing can stop our away support.
Brilliant. Okay, so it's time for this week's instalment of the quiz. Last week's instalment was quite controversial due to, I think, Harry being a bit spiteful that he didn't get the questions when I first asked him.
I just don't know why I didn't get Podolski.
Yeah, and then he decided to basically screw me.
Sorry about that one.
So, yeah, none of our listeners got any of them, really.
We found the level of what's too harsh then.
Yeah, I think so. And I've brought it back down, I think, for this week, because,
kind of,
as they say, an eye for an eye makes the whole world blind.
It does.
And I'm going to be the bigger man and not retaliate.
Fair enough.
So, here we go. So, question number one is, name Britain's 6th Prime Minister. I'm joking. I'm joking. Okay. Name Arsenal's 3 goal scorers from the 3-2 FA Cup win against Brighton.
That was years ago, wasn't it? I'm not sure I'm going to get this.
You know the game I'm talking about, yeah?
It was in the FA Cup. We were in a yellow kit, Puma kit.
Yeah.
I know the game you're talking about. I'm not sure if I'm going to remember. There's some people that... I'm going to write someone that, if I get it wrong, I think would be the guy that I got wrong for.
Right, so second question. What was the date of Arsenal's 2-0 scorpion kick win over Crystal Palace? I want the year as well, please.
Blimey. Oh, God, this could get me over this. Oh, no, got it. Because he joined Chelsea in January 2018. So I'm going for January 2017.
Okay, and the third one, just a little mention of the international break. So how many Arsenal players are going on international duty?
Well, Xhaka's injured, so he's not going. We've got Ramsdale, Saka, Leno.
And just to stick it out there, this is the answer that I got. I'm happy to be proved wrong.
Okay. Tierney. Gabriel doesn't get called up for Brazil yet. I'm guessing Tomiyasu plays for Japan. I'm not sure if they have games. Partey, Oba, Elneny will go with... He's just come back from injury, so I hope they have selected him. Elneny should go to Egypt. Lokonga, does he get called up for Belgium on the bench? I think he does. It's actually more than I was anticipating, unless none of these players got called up. Pepe will get called up for Ivory Coast. Do we count ESR with the England under-21s?
No. Okay. No youth teams.
Okay. Odegaard, of course, will get called up for Norway. Am I forgetting anyone? Martinelli doesn't get called up for Brazil. All right, I'm going to stick with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Right, should be the answers then.
Yes. So, Arsenal's three goal scorers.
I think I might get two right here, one wrong.
Okay.
I've gone for Walcott.
Yeah.
Rizicki.
Yeah.
Cazorla.
Ooh.
That's the one wrong. I've gone, okay, the backup Giroud.
No.
Was it Flamini?
No, it was Ozil.
Ozil, okay.
That's a point for me.
So if I don't get both of these right...
Yeah, you're in trouble.
I've lost this...
This...
section of quiz.
Yeah. So the date of Arsenal's 2-0?
1st of January 2017.
Yeah, that's correct. And how many Arsenal players are going
gone
on?
Gone for 11. I've definitely got this wrong.
You're so close. It's 12.
Who's the... Okay. Ramsdale, Saka...
You've got all of them right.
Who have I missed?
Cedric.
Fucking Cedric.
Goes with Portugal.
He won the Euros with Portugal, didn't he?
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot you played for
us. That's a really good effort, though. That's like a lot better than I thought you were going to do.
Yeah, fair enough. Well done, mate.
So, just to finish off this week's podcast, we always do our Premier League roundup. So, let's do it. United versus Everton.
Poor from United.
They're not good, are they?
They're not very good.
And I think Ole's in trouble.
Because if you look at his next set of fixtures, I think it might be 10 or something.
Their next seven?
In Europe and in the league.
Their next seven, they have the Big Six and Leicester.
No, well, if you're including us and Spurs in the Big Six, then yeah.
Yeah, the Big Five and Leicester and Watford.
Yeah. So and they've got Atalanta twice, I think, in Europe.
Yeah, he's in a bit of trouble, especially...
Well, if they keep him performing like this, which they will, because they don't have a visible...
No, I don't really see an out.
...tactical plan, yeah. Do they? Everyone says it on every platform, so this might be boring to listeners, but they really do rely on... individual moments of brilliance because they have world-class players all over the pitch.
Yeah.
I think Ollie's... It's a bit like us with Arteta where Ollie's built players to suit him.
His system,
is a bit contradictory to the fact that we're saying that he doesn't have much of a system.
But
it's a thing where if you brought in a Conte...
Yeah.
...that he'd have to rip it up again because he relies on players like Victor Moses and Ashley Young to be wing-backs.
Everton were actually really good. Probably decent, could have won it.
Very compact in midfield. Adam Ndokore, very hard to break down.
Yeah.
It's really nice. It's very, very traditional. One, they both break up play, decent distribution, and then one goes and one sits.
Yeah. I mean, me and my dad were saying this. They've sort of gone back to like just basics. Old school Everton. Just dogs of war go there, and they're a hard team to beat.
I mean, I guess Darren Ferguson's influence must be quite big. As
Duncan!
Duncan, big Duncan, apologies, Duncan. Darren Ferguson's Fergie's son, right?
Yeah.
Different Ferguson, it's confusing.
Yeah, it's unlucky. And then we had the 3 o'clock games. Wasn't much going on there. Chelsea beat Southampton, they were a little bit lucky.
I didn't manage to catch that, but I heard there were some controversies towards the end of the match in the second half.
Yeah, I was actually watching the highlights just before we came. Werner, another disallowed goal.
He's the all-time Premier League record holder of
disallowed goals. Yeah. But yeah, I thought Chelsea were a bit lucky, actually. Didn't perform that well. The most stonewall penalty ever.
Really?
On, I think it was Livramento from Chilwell, just an awful challenge. But then Chelsea kicked on a little bit in the
towards
last
the
10.
End.
Yeah, and James Ward-Prowse got sent off, actually. Quite a bad challenge.
Really?
Yeah.
Disappointing that they managed to come back, because I thought if they and United had dropped points, it would have made it all.
Yeah, we were all thinking before the game, like, well, where can we go if we win?
Well, we're not going to be delusional.
No.
More so to make our point about where we could finish in the top within the top six this season.
It's nice to be up there.
Between 1st and 11th, there are 6 points. It's two games. It's all really compact. Actually, the results today, despite Spurs losing the Spurs Villa game and the West Ham Brentford game, that has made sort of the five positions that we're within in the league really compact and within 2 points. So it's not been a dreadful weekend for us. We're still very much in there and it's all quite tight. Nothing to stress about.
Yeah. Were there any more talking points from the three
from Saturdays?
Games? So there was Burnley 0, Norwich 0. I don't think we need to talk about that. Leeds beat Watford 1-0.
Watford sat their manager.
Yeah, a bit weird.
This is why I don't like Watford.
They've had 12 managers in the last 10 years now.
It's a joke. Have you seen they've been linked with Ranieri and he's
supposedly... Yeah, I'd quite like to see him come back, actually.
So would I, but he's just a bit sad because you know he'll be sacked at the end of the season, so you don't want to see the great man go through that.
And then Wolves beat Newcastle 2-1. Wolves' new signing is actually looking really good.
So a few goals to his name now, doesn't he?
Yeah, he scored there too. And Jimenez set them both up. They look like they're working quite well together.
Things are looking bad for Newcastle. They are so reliant on Saint Maximin.
Yeah,
he's a wicked player.
They have one good player, and that's it.
Two, Callum Wilson.
He's quite good.
Yeah.
But Saint Maximin's really good.
Yeah.
But yeah, apart from that, bit bleak for Newcastle. And then today's games, Palace 2-2 with Leicester.
So I was at work, I got out of work at 4 and then cycled up to Lowell's to watch what was an extraordinary match of football.
So I'm going to have to fill you in on Palace-Leicester.
You are.
So Palace, pretty dominant opening. They look really good under Vieira, actually. I really like watching them.
And their style of play quite expansive then?
Yeah, it's really nice to see a Palace team actually play proper football.
Well, it's the complete opposite to what we've seen for the last 5 years.
Exactly. Somehow found themselves 2-0 down, and then second half, Palace just kicked on and took their chances. What's his name? He's young. They brought him on in the second half. Elisu, I think his name is.
Like an Elise, I played against him.
Yeah. Well, he's very good at football.
He's extraordinarily talented. He's very technically gifted, got a lovely left foot. He's strong, can shoot, assist.
Yeah.
Can play across the front three, I think.
Yeah. So that was a really good game at Selhurst Park. And then Spurs got lucky at home to Villa, I thought. They were better, but still, I think playing against a better team, they would have lost. Villa were not great going forward.
Well, I saw they lost to an own goal, which is infuriating.
Yeah, to be fair, it could have been Lucas Moura's goal as well. It was a bit like it went across the box.
Defender
had to get there.
Put his body on the line.
Yeah. So
Spurs, as long as the performance wasn't bad, I guess we're at a point where there's only two points within us, Spurs, Brentford, West Ham, etc.
Yeah.
So it's recoverable.
Brentford are on fire.
They are.
Beating West Ham last minute, but first half they were completely all over them.
Any signs from highlights of the match, or if you watched the whole match, I don't know, that West Ham were a bit leggy from
I think West Ham are going to be a team this year that suffer a little bit from their European nights. I don't think they have a big enough squad.
They don't. I think they actually have a big enough squad to be competent in the Europa League, but not in the Premier League, if that makes sense. So a Mark Noble...
I mean, they'll still be in and around.
They'll be in the top 10, I think, but not pushing on for top 4 at points, which they were last season.
And
players
also,
like Yarmolenko and Mark Noble are good enough to play in the Europa League,
yeah.
but... not possibly got the legs to do it again 3 days later.
But also, like, you'd probably like to play them in the Europa League, but given it's their first time in Europe, I think the competition actually means a lot to them this year. So they're playing their first.
I mean, the London Stadium was rampacked.
Yeah.
Against who are they playing?
Rapid Vienna.
Rapid Vienna, who they played last year, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember David Luiz header away from home.
Yeah. And then the 4:30 game, which we watched together, was an
extraordinary match of football.
Oh, City were brilliant.
City were outstanding. Let's just get it out there. City deserved to win the match.
They really did.
Mo Salah was world class. Some individual moments.
Oh, what a goal.
Genius from him. Both goals, his assist and his goal.
It really reminded me of in his first season, the goal he scored against Everton and the goal he scored against Tottenham.
And what I think he scored one against Watford.
Yeah, he scored one against
Watford,
where he just sort of jinx around it. He was
It's
he
when
was
he can feel people, so he can get his hands on a couple of people pressing him.
Yeah.
He's got the strength to go get off and then change direction, a few little movements of his left foot, and then just rifle it.
Yeah, but what a second half of football.
I mean, in the first half, by the way, Manchester City were outstanding.
Yeah, completely
they should have
dominant.
Been 2 or 3 nil up at half time. You've got what would have been one of the best assists of Premier League history from Bernardo Silva, who I'm going to big up again. Right now, he's the best midfielder in the league, on form. Don't care about stats.
He's not doing anything today. He's not doing anything to prove you wrong at the moment.
He's not. That performance that he put in today was the same away at Chelsea last week. It's been the same in every match I've watched him play this season. He's been unbelievable.
Yeah. No, he's been really good.
As was Foden, who should have finished the chance that he put through to. Actually, to say should have is a bit harsh.
Yeah. Yeah, he might have done something differently when Edison played that ball over.
Yeah, that was a second chance. And then That was two of their chances in the first half. They had a De Bruyne header at the back post.
Oh, yeah, which is where he skied it, yeah.
So if we're being honest, on another day they could have scored two out of those three big chances, but they dominated Liverpool first half.
And I was saying to Harry, I think probably today was one of those games for City where they missed having an out-and-out striker, someone that's ruthless and that's going to take, you know, it's only going to take them two chances to score, whereas it took City 8 or 9 to score today.
Yeah, it's a fair point. However, we were also discussing that in this context, I'd apply just if they had Harry Kane rather than any striker, because the chances they were getting are because they play the full starting system. So would they have got those chances with a number 9? Perhaps not. Perhaps their chances would have had to be created differently. But with Harry Kane, who played as a 9 and a false 9 because he drops in, perhaps he would have killed the game off in the first half. Because those chances that Foden got down the left, if he had a striker to sweaty it across to.
Yeah, would have been a different story. But yeah, brilliant game. Without doubt, the game of the weekend. Okay, well, that's it for today. Thanks for listening. We've now got a 2-week break before the Arsenal play again, but I think we're going to release an episode during the international break. So stay tuned on Twitter for that. It will be a special. But yeah, until then, take care.